Chapter 13 of Revelation. Listening time is approximately 60 minutes. What's the title of this? Okay, it's going to be about the Antichrist. You want any more detail about him? The setting here. Somebody want to read 8?
The Antichrist has made a peace treaty with Israel.
That's a review. One half of the earth's population has been killed. You had a fourth, and then you had a third of the remaining. So that's a half. Now he's going to be revealed, and so we have what we call the what? Last of the great Gentile nations or empires, kingdoms. And it's going to be the kingdom of who? The kingdom of the Antichrist, or the revived Roman Empire. That's the setting. We're in the middle of the tribulation. Antichrist revealed in Revelation 13, verses 1 and 2. Someone want to read that?
And the dragon stood on the shore of the sea, and I saw a beast coming out of the sea. He had 10 horns and 7 heads and 10 crowns on his horns, and on each head a blasphemous name.
Let's go back to the chart again. Who's at the top of the evil side? Say, who's standing on the shore? Is it dragon or is it John?
Dragon on the shore.
So John sees this, and we have this beast. Now it describes the beast, doesn't it? Now we know that this beast is going to be the what? The Antichrist. The dragon equals Satan. The beast here equals the Antichrist. We call this beast number one, but there will be another beast. It doesn't say beast number two, but it just says another beast. Now it describes this, that he has what?
7 heads.
What are the 7 heads? From the previous chapters.
Those other previous kingdoms.
Right. The 7 great Gentile empires or kingdoms, starting with what? Egypt, and going all the way up to Rome. And I listed them for you back in the other handout. And then what do we have? What does it say under number 1, A1? These are various views of this, the first one. What's that word? Preterist? Okay. Preterist means prior to. All of Revelation was fulfilled during the century, what century?
First
century, and Nero was the Antichrist. That's what many people believe, that we don't need to study Revelation because it's already been all fulfilled. Well, Nero was the type of an Antichrist, that's true. So those people definitely would see it that way. And it's not that that's not true, but the Bible has many different levels of meaning. So it's a pre-fulfillment and then a post-fulfillment. So the next group, the historical, the history of the church, and the Pope was the Antichrist. That's the historical view. 3, I believe it's an Alice in Wonderland, where the central, what?
Principles
are dealt with. How about the futurists? They believe in all the views have some truth, but that the final fulfillment will take place at the end of the church age. This is the view that we are studying by. B, he, meaning the Antichrist, becomes a world leader. Now, when it says he or I saw a beast rising out of the sea, how many Bibles that you have says he? How many says I? I would be a better translation. I think the King James says he. So now under A, you can fill that in. Beast 1, the first beast is what?
Antichrist.
An Antichrist. Now it says coming out of the sea. Now we got to go back to the imagery of the sea and the land. Unless it names a sea, what does it mean? Like the glassy sea, it means a lot of people that are redeemed, pure, a mass of people. In this case, we have the sea versus the land. Anytime it says the land, it's referring to what? What nation?
Israel.
When it says the sea, it doesn't mean the water. It means anything apart from Israel. We call it the what? If it's not Jewish or Israeli, it's what?
Gentile.
Gentile. That means that the Antichrist will be a Gentile, not a Jew. That's all that really means. See, a lot of people say, oh, it's going to be some sea monster coming out of the sea. What do we have next then under 2? The beast had 7 heads, 10 horns, and 10 crowns on the horns. So it's written on each of the heads. All right, so we have the 7 heads. Dolores already mentioned what they were symbolic of. And I think if we go to the next page, I actually lay it out for you. Now, what did the beast look like?
Leopard.
A leopard, bear's feet, and lion's teeth. What other imagery can you think of in those nations? What were those nations depicted as? What was the symbol for Babylon? The winged lion. What was the animal given for the Medo-Persian? The bear. What was the animal given to the Greek? A leopard. So what does it say? He's going to look like the leaders of those nations, like those nations, only he's got all 3 of them, so it's even going to be more so, right? More destructive. That's all it is. It's linking it to those 3 of those 7 kingdoms. The cross references 1 John 2:18 and 1 John 4:3. And then we'll get into the heads, horns, and crowns. 1 John 2:18.
Dear children, this is the last hour, and as you have heard that the Antichrist is coming, even now many Antichrists have come. This is how we know it is the last hour.
So there have been many spirits of the Antichrist, right? Now this is the Antichrist, 1 John 4:3.
Every spirit that does not acknowledge Jesus is not from God. This is the spirit of the Antichrist, which you have heard is coming, and even now is already in the world.
So in other words, this spirit of the Antichrist has been around for a long time, right? Right from the very beginning. 2 John 7, there are no chapters in 2 John, verse 7.
Watch for false leaders, and there are many of them around, who don't believe that Jesus Christ came to earth as a human being with a body like ours. Such people are against the truth and against Christ.
Interpreting that then, anybody who does not believe that Jesus Christ is God is what? Is against Christ. So in a sense, they're an antichrist. Remember, antichrist has 2 meanings. So what is it? What does the prefix anti literally mean? If you're anti something.
Against.
You're against. What else can it mean in Scripture? This is definitely against Christ, against God, but also imitating Christ. False. The Antichrist is a false Christ, but he's against Christ too. What it's saying there in John, it's really speaking that are against. And there are times I've been an Antichrist. Hopefully, as a believer, we're not. Now, all I want to say about these heads, crowns, horns, there are several scriptures, and they will have a little different perspective because they're talking about different period of history. So don't get confused. That's all I want to say to start with. Let's go through it if you really like to know. Back to Revelation 12:3. 7 heads, 10 horns with 7 crowns. There are only 7 crowns. Revelation 13:1 says what? 7 heads, 10 horns with 10 crowns. Oh, there's an error in the scriptures. Right? What's the first thing you need to say to yourself? First, the Bible's not wrong. So this means that it's referring to something different, a different perspective on this. Why would one be 7 and one be 10? If we go to Revelation 17:9-14, see there we have 7 heads, 7 hills, and 7 kings. 7 kings now. 5 kings have fallen, 6 now reign, the 7th is yet to come, and the reign will be brief, and then the 8th is the scarlet beast was alive and then dead. And now we have another 10 horns equaling 10 kings to come. The 10 kings gave the power to the 8th king. Now, what does all this mean? Well, let's go back to what Dolores said to start with the heads. It's referring to the seven Gentile kingdoms: Egypt, Assyria, Babylonian, Medo-Persian, Greek, and Roman. If you count those, how many do you have?
Six.
At the time of the writing of this, now remember, John, writing in the first century, says five kings have fallen. What are they? The king of Egypt, the king of Assyria, the king of Babylon, the king of the Medo-Persian, and the king of the Greeks. What king was in power at the time of John? Who put him on the Isle of Patmos? The Romans. So they are the what? The sixth. You see that? The sixth now reigns. That's the Romans. So you can write there under 5b1. Five kings that have fallen, you can name them: the Egyptian, Assyrian, Babylonian, Medo-Persian, and Greek. The sixth now reigns, now meaning at that time. Now, first century, Roman. Seventh is yet to come, and reign will be brief. So it becomes the Antichrist, but briefly it's the United Europe. It's the revived Roman Empire, which is a democracy. The eighth is a scarlet beast, was alive and then dead. See, that's talking about the Antichrist. We already talked about the ten horns, the ten kings to come, which are probably going to be in power now, these governors over these ten regions. The ten kings are given power to the eighth king. And that is where that prophecy goes in of the little horn coming up among the three and getting control. Okay, that fits in right there with the ten give him power eventually. So that number four there, the eighth kingdom, is the Antichrist kingdom. The other one is just the revived Roman Empire. The ninth kingdom is, well, the stone that came and broke the statue, fell on the ten toes, and that's Jesus Christ. And we'll read about that later in Revelation. All right, proceeding under number seven, remember Nebuchadnezzar had that dream of the head of gold, the Babylonian? Okay, there's spelled out for you there. Now there you're going to have a different listing, because that's based on the time of Daniel in Babylon. Which two are left out of that list? The two that came before the Babylonian, the Assyrian and the Egyptian, are left out. So it depends on the time period from who is speaking, whether there's seven or five or whatever. You follow that? So all these give clues, but we want to be careful we don't see them as being contradiction. But now, in the Nebuchadnezzar dream, see, he goes further. He starts with the Babylonian, then he goes up to the Antichrist, and then he talks about this mountain coming down and hitting the statue on the feet, busting it, which is the Antichrist kingdom, and then the stone fills the earth. That's the picture of Christ, second coming. So that's Jesus' empire, the millennial, going into the millennium. That's what that's referring to. So now if we go over to 8 on the next page, we'll see God's view of that same dream. Remember, man saw it as this gorgeous statue, but that is not how God sees it. So now if we look in Daniel 7, 3 through 9, somebody want to read that? Daniel 7, verses 3 through 9. This is parallel now to that dream that Nebuchadnezzar had that Daniel interpreted about the statue. But this is God's view of it now.
Four great beasts were coming up from the sea, different from one another.
And they came up from where?
The sea.
Okay, so they're Gentile nations, right?
The first was like a lion and had the wings of an angel. I kept looking until its wings were plucked, and it was lifted up from the ground and made to stand on 2 feet like a man. A human mind also was given to it. And behold, another...
Can you picture that as who? It's so obvious who that is. What happened to Nebuchadnezzar? The winged lion is a symbol for Babylon. Its wings were plucked. Nebuchadnezzar was sent out in the field because he said he was boasting about his kingdom, right? So it's talking about Nebuchadnezzar. Now we go to the next one.
And behold, another beast, a second one, resembling a bear. And it was raised up on one side,
and three ribs were in the mouth between its teeth. And thus they said to it, arise, devour much meat.
The bear is a symbol for who took over from the Babylonians. The Medo-Persian. And which empire was greater, the Medes or the Persians? The Persian. The bear was higher on one side than the other. There were two kingdoms. One was greater than the other. See the imagery? What about the three ribs? It had been eating up what? The ribs are symbolic of three kingdoms that preceded it. What are they? Rib number one?
Egyptian.
Rib two?
Assyria.
Three? Yeah, Egyptian, Assyrian, and Babylonian. And the ribs, because that's all that's left. If you've ever seen an animal, they kind of like barbecued ribs too, I guess. And so they always walk around with some ribs in their mouth. The third one?
After this I kept looking, and behold, another one, like a leopard, which had on its back four wings of a bird. The beast also had four heads, and dominion was given to it.
So now we have what country? Greece. Why four wings? It moved quickly, and Alexander had how many generals? Four. Four heads. There were four generals. Iron teeth, this means they were vicious. Fourth one.
After this, I kept looking in the night visions, and behold, a fourth beast, a dreadful and terrifying and extremely strong, and it had large iron teeth. It devoured and crushed and trampled down the remainder with its feet. And with it, and it was different from all the beasts that were before, and it had 10 horns.
Now it's referring to Rome. It had 10 horns. Does it go on to talk about one small horn appeared?
While I was contemplating the horns, behold, another horn, a little one, came up among them, and three of the first horns were pulled out by the roots before it. And behold, this horn possessed eyes like the eyes of a man, and a mouth uttering great boasts.
Somebody want to take a stab at that? First of all, there are 10 horns. Now before we had heads. Heads were the empires. Now horns are what? They're going to be the head of regions within an empire. There are going to be 10 regions in the Antichrist kingdom. Today in the world, Europe is already divided into 10 regions. The whole world is divided into 10 regions. Now don't get the beast confused with the beast, because that's the Antichrist, and this another beast will be the false prophet. We're not talking about that. Remember the comparison where Nebuchadnezzar had the dream of the statue. Daniel interprets it, and it's this beautiful statue with the gold head. That's how man views the empires of the world. God views it as these ravenous beasts. This is God's view of it. And that's why he used the word beast. So don't get that mixed up. Here's where it gets confusing, because the Bible has flash forwards. This 10-horn thing is referring to what? The nations within. Remember, there are only 7 empires. It didn't say there was 10 heads. It said there are 10 horns. This part below, the detail in the outline, is future. This statue started with gold, and that's the head, right? And then it came down, and that represented Babylon. And you had the arms, this upper part, was silver. You had the Medo and the Persian. Then the main part of the body here, the bronze, represented the Greek Empire. Now you get down to the two legs. The Roman Empire split, didn't it? You had the Western and you had the Eastern. Today in Catholicism, you have Eastern Catholicism and Roman Catholicism. Right? Because that came out of the Roman Empire. The capital of the Western was what city?
Rome.
Rome, absolutely. The capital of the Eastern?
Constantinople,
which today is what? Istanbul. That's where you have the Greek Orthodox, the Armenian Orthodox, the Russian Orthodox, all of that. That's the religious part. The empire split before it fell and collapsed. And what did it collapse into? Nations. Germany, France, British, Switzerland, Italy, Greek, and so on. The old Roman Empire came nationalistic into nations. Now we have the feet and we have 10 toes. We're in history right here at the feet. The toes are starting to take place because Europe has now come back together. So now, instead of one empire taking over the other, it eventually got dissolved into nations and now starts reversing itself and coming back into an empire. It's called the revived Roman Empire. We know it today as what? The United Europe. Did you ever think that Europe would peacefully be united? Who tried to unite it at World War I time?
Hitler.
No, not Hitler. World War II, Hitler. Before Hitler, the Kaiser? Wilhelm. Before that, Bonaparte, Napoleon, the French? They tried to unify Europe through war, through military. Well, the Bible says it will be united, but it will be a political and economic alliance. And that's already happened. This is future. So don't get confused. 10 horns are what? These 10 toes. But they're not 10 heads. Here's where it gets confusing, and I'm going to just spell it out now, and then we'll go down in the chart there, and you'll see all this other already spells it out in the Bible if you want validation. But here's what happens. This then becomes what? What empire? What number? We have the Egyptian, the Assyrian, the Babylonian, Medo-Persian, the Greek, the Roman. How many is that? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. So where's the seventh? It's the Empire of the Toes. So it's the revived Roman Empire becomes the seventh. Now the seventh one is going to transist into whose empire? The Antichrist Empire. That's portrayed by the beast and the woman riding the beast. So how does this transist? Right there. There were 10 horns, which means what? We're looking now at the revived Roman Empire. The 10 toes become one. But in there are 10 what? What do you want to call them? We call our states. It could be provinces, or it could be regions. There'll be 10 divisions within this revived Roman Empire. How many divisions are there in the United Europe? Not countries, but divisions, governing areas where there's a person over that, like our states versus our federal. 10. They've already set it up. There will be no more than 10. There are already 10 configurations in here. And you can go and research and find out what countries constitute each one of those. The little horn is symbolic of the Antichrist. And he is going to do what? He's going to come up among three. He's going to have influence over three of these regions. They're going to like him. And eventually he gains power over these three. And there's one. Now he's got one against seven. And eventually he takes over all seven. What did Hitler do? He started out as being the chancellor, and then he starts getting power and abolishing this and abolishing that, and eventually takes over. A political takeover, and this will happen the same thing. So as we go on now, identify what country he may come from, about his character and so on, we may be able to identify those three areas of where he'll be able to deal with. Chapter 13, verse 3 and 4.
I saw that one of his heads seemed wounded beyond recovery, but the fatal wound was healed. All the world marveled at this miracle and followed the creature in awe.
They worship the dragon for giving him such power, and they worship the strange creature. Where is there anyone as great as he, they exclaimed, who is able to fight against him?
Dragon is symbolic of Satan. Satan gave the beast what? His own power.
His throne, his authority.
Exactly.
And that's the Antichrist.
Yeah, the beast there is the Antichrist. It's not those kingdoms up above. Under E, one had appeared to be wounded. But this wounded seemed to what? Be fatal. However, it appeared then to be healed. All right, now, what's this about? And if you read a lot about this, you'll find there are two kind of schools of thought on this. Some people think it's totally symbolic. Other people think it could be that somebody tried to assassinate him and he recovered. Or it could be both. I guess we can say this. It appears like he's out of the picture and then he comes back. Whether it's just a political thing, whereas the little horn is coming up, he has a lot of struggle, or he gets control of those three, and then he has problems with the others. So it looks like he's not going to make it, but he makes it. That's the main point of this whole thing. Also, you remember, Satan does have certain powers, but not over life and death. And remember, he is trying to falsify Christ. He's trying to be a false Christ, and he's against Christ. Anti-Christ means against and false. Jesus performed miracles. So it could be that he's trying to imitate that, because remember, he's trying to draw all people to himself. Satan is behind it, trying to draw all people to him, away from God. Satan doesn't want anybody to be saved. He knows he's headed for hell. He wants to take as many of God's creation with him. That's his goal. He's using the Antichrist, who is a man who doesn't even realize what's happening. But it's a person obviously likes power, and there are a lot of those around. What do we have under F?
The people's response.
What is the people's response? Aren't we taken by people who has this charismatic, attractive person, well-spoken, very impressive? And of course, people are attracted. We see that in our own life. Pastor is good looking and says some nice things.
And the cults.
Yeah. So that shouldn't surprise us. Because remember, the dragon is trying to do what? The dragon is trying to draw everything to him. Satan is trying to draw it to him, but he's using this beast we call the Antichrist, this person. And the person thinks that everybody's going to be worshiping him. Remember, Satan has no friends. He uses even his supporters. Under G, our cross-reference, we've already read 13:1. I kind of already explained this, about the Roman Empire rising again. Verses 12 through 14 of chapter gives us some more on the fatalness. Now we can go back over to the next page. Let's go to Zechariah 11:4 through 17. The gist of that is what? There is a mention of an evil shepherd and a good shepherd. We always think of Psalm 23 as the good shepherd, and it tells a lot about Jesus, what a good shepherd does. Think of literal sheep and a literal shepherd. Without a shepherd, what happens to sheep?
They stray.
What else?
Become subject to their enemies, their predators.
They're easy prey.
They're lost.
The lost? What about the still waters? What's that all about in that psalm? That psalm has, it's nothing to do with funerals. The valley, the shadow of death, and so on. Sheep get in water. If they fall in the water, what happens?
They drown.
Yeah, they're like a sponge. They get weight and they drown. They will die of thirst before they drink out of fast-moving water. That's what that means, the still waters. Then they can drink and be fed. And so there's spiritual meanings to that. But that's what a good shepherd is about. So what's an evil shepherd going to do then? Take and reverse that. He's going to get you down to the fast-moving waters and make it believe that they're still moving, so the sheep get in there and they're done away with. Satan is death. He wants everybody dead. He's called the son of perdition, which means destruction. He's a destroyer. And he does it through deception. And that's what's happening here. We have an evil shepherd, in a sense, coming in. So there's a parallel again. It's just another parallel between the Antichrist and the true Christ. Here are some things about him that says, abandons the flock. And what else has he done?
Sword cuts his arm.
Right.
Pierces his right eye.
Not very pleasant. Now let's go into four. We're comparing what? The Roman Empire to the Antichrist. And that was in Daniel 9, 26 and 27. This is where you have this period of time. We went over that in another part of Revelation. The 70 weeks of years. 62 sevens in Hebrew is 70 weeks of years. 70 times 7 equals 490 years. Now, what kind of years are these? Solar or lunar? Jewish is always on what? Lunar. The Jewish calendar is a lunar. How many days in a month?
28.
28. How many months in a year? I think there are 12. So 12 times 28, but when you get all of ours together, it's 365 and what, a fourth? Because the leap year is 336 days in a year. And you can see what happens with 365. Every year, you're getting older in their system faster. So when you're calculating here now, you got to forget about 2006 and all that stuff because it won't work out right. So we're talking lunar. 490 years from a certain date. It has to do with the temple. But it goes back to where Jesus is cut off, and that meant crucified. And he was crucified after 483 years of this 490. 483 years would be to the cross. Now, this is all before the cross, this was written. What's significant about this? Because God's timeline says all of this will be completed. Where's the other 7 years? This is about Jewish now, is the tribulation. The last 7 years of this church age is the completion of this prophecy. Because God is predominantly working with the Gentiles in the church age, and he's going to be working predominantly with the Jews in the tribulation. Chapter 7 of Revelation, 144,000 evangelists, Jews. It's the Jewish program. He's going to finish what he started with the Jews, but because the leadership denied Christ, he shifted over to the Gentiles. And then the fullness comes into the Gentiles. That's why the church is raptured out. Then the church begins anew, in a sense, with the Jews again. It began with the Jews, it ends with the Jews. And that's your 7 years that's missing. It's like there's a big grandfather's clock, and the pendulum starts ticking back here. And when Christ is crucified, God reaches down, stops the pendulum. This begins, he starts the pendulum again. What can we find out about the character? D, the Antichrist. Okay, we're revealed that he is a citizen of Rome. Now, it's not of the city of Rome, it's the Roman Revised Empire. He's known as the Prince of the Air. He's not the king. Remember, the Lord has the scroll, the title deed to the earth, but Satan still has some authority here. Not as much as he used to have.
So, he'd be from the United Europe then?
Yes. And we'll get more detail of actually one of two nations. Remember the peace treaty, which was false, was at the first part of the 7 years. We've already studied that. Now he breaks the treaty after 3.5 years of the 7 years. In other words, the midpoint of the tribulation. Remember, he went to heaven and had that final battle and got all angry and came back. And then starts making war with the offspring, which is Israel. This 3.5 years that's remaining, the middle of tribulation to the end, is sometimes called the time of Jacob's trouble, Jacob meaning Israel, or the great tribulation. What is this set up in? He sets this object up in the temple. Remember, they rebuild the temple. So what is he setting up in the temple? What is the object going to be? What did Nebuchadnezzar set up after he had that dream about the statue?
Some idol?
Yeah, be an idol of who?
Himself.
Of himself. How are you going to get people to worship you if you don't have your image up there? There is some evidence that this will be a robotic type of image, that it will speak and move. If you've been to Disney World and seen Abe Lincoln, technology-wise, it could be done, where it becomes very realistic. So they'll actually think there's been impersonated. And of course, that upsets the Jews. Then they realize they've been had. And that's when all hell literally breaks loose. Well, let's take a look at Daniel then, 8, 3 through 14.
As I was looking around, I saw a ram with two long horns standing on the riverbank. As I watched, one of each horns began to blow, so that it was longer than the other. The ram butted everything out of its way, and no one could stand against it or help its victims. He sent as it pleased and became very great. While I was wondering what this could mean, suddenly a buck goat appeared from the west so swiftly that it didn't even touch the ground. This goat, which had one very large horn between its eyes, rushed furiously at the two-horned ram. And the closer he came, the angrier he was. He charged into the ram and broke off both his horns. Now the ram was helpless, and the buckboat knocked him down and trampled him, for there was no one to rescue him.
But do you have any ideas? Does it represent a person, a nation, an empire, or what? Could be a nation, but in this case, it's actually an empire. It's going to be one of the seven. Now, you want to take a guess? It's more detail about what happens with those seven. It's a battle between two of those empires, so we know it has to be two that come together in history. So you got Egypt, the Assyrian, the Babylonian, the Medo-Persian, the Greek, and the Roman. It's got to be two put together.
Egypt pretty dominant at that time?
No, because Egypt and the Assyrian are pretty well out of it, because most of the prophecies take place from Babylon on. Why are these two horns and this one big horn? Why two horns? What empire had two divisions? The bear had one side higher than the other. Now it's a ram. The Medes and the Persians. And then who would this be? Who's the one big guy? Alexander the Great. Remember before, this was pictured as a leopard, and this was pictured as a bear. See, now it's talking about more detail what happened here. And there's a reason for this.
Okay, the victor became both proud and powerful, but suddenly at the height of his power, his horn was broken.
Now, which horn are we talking about, the goat or the ram?
Just said the victor.
The victor, which is the goat. So this horn gets broken.
In its place grew four good-sized horns, pointing in four directions. One of these, growing slowly at first, soon became very strong and attacked the south and east and warred against the land of Israel. He fought against the people of God and defeated some of their leaders. He even challenged the commander of the army of heaven by canceling the daily sacrifices offered to him and by defrauding his temple. But the army of heaven was restrained from destroying him for his transgression. As a result, truth and righteousness perished, and evil triumphed and prospered. Then I heard two of the holy angels talking to each other. One of them said, "How long will it be until a daily sacrifice is restored again? How long until the destruction of the temple is avenged and God's people triumph?" The other replied, 2,300 days must first go by.
Daniel has so much history in it. Now, can you see the one's broken off, Alexander dies, and there are four generals, right? See how it fits? Now, what is happening here then? Of course, the goat gets rid of the Medo-Persian. They're out of it. Alexander conquers everything and dies out of heartbreak because there's nothing else to conquer. Four generals. But one of those generals, and that's the one we want to look at, because he is a type of the Antichrist, and there's a name I can put to him. He destroys what temple? And what part of the Greek Empire is he from? There are four regions that come out of this. Egypt is over here, and the Middle East, which is called Trans-Euphrates, means cross the Euphrates, remember Abraham crossed? And that's what Hebrew means, one who crossed the river, Euphrates River. And this whole area was called Trans-Euphrates, Israel. That's what it was called way back. And then you have Syria, which is the old Assyrian Empire. And you have Greece and Rome and that up in here. He became the leader in this one. And he came in and destroyed Zerubbabel's temple, which is the second temple, the one we're studying in church that you can read about in Ezra and Nehemiah. Well, what's the significance then? Why are we also being directed here and given all this detail of this one? Remember the little horn got control of three. Here's the little horn coming up. It seems insignificant, and he becomes the most powerful of all four of these. And he goes against Israel. Antiochus Epiphanes is his name. So the parallel is that this is a type of Antichrist. What nation was he from? What today is it? Syria. So he could be Syrian, some people say. But he actually was a what? A Greek. So his nationality could be Greek. Some people say Syrian or Greek. Now, it doesn't mean he has to be living in Syria today. It could mean that his genealogy is. But it somehow will be connected into this. That's what this is telling us about. 168 is when they destroyed the temple. In the next page, under H, we get into his character. And I have some cross-references here if you want to check all those out. But basically, what is it saying? He's like the what? King of Babylon. It also says he's what? Congenial or gentle or... So basically, he's going to do what? I mean, he's going to tell you what to do. Dictate. Dictator. These are the Bible words. That's why I put them in there. He's the willful king, which means what? He does what he wants. Ah, he does whatever he wants. He's his own God. He's also referred to as the man of sin, the lawless one, the son of destruction or perdition. These are titles now. Would you like those titles? No. Or sometimes, like in Revelation 13, he's just called the beast, the beast. And he's also called the what? Bold, clever, a liar, and a homosexual. Revelation 13:5 says that he does not have a desire for women, so that's interpreted that way. Now, and that may seem shocking to you that you'd have a homosexual as the Antichrist. What do we find happening in the world today about homosexuality?
Trying to come to the forefront. They're wanting gay marriages.
Okay.
Well, they're coming into the churches.
And go further than that.
They're being accepted.
And go further.
They're leaving the church. They're becoming.
They are the leaders of the church. Pastors. A bishop.
Take it into more... what's the final step is preferred. It's elevated above a heterosexual marriage. Mm-hmm. Now, what other times in history have we seen this happen? It's not new. When Christianity and Judaism are strong, you will not see that. It will be hidden. It will not be flaunted. In Greece, the Greek Empire, homosexuality, they were considered to be gods. They were elevated. In the time the Greeks were in power, homosexuals were considered gods. They were given high esteem. We're getting to the point where I'm trying to show you where it's going is it's preferred. What does it say in Romans chapter 1, about verse 18 through 22? It said they gave up what? Worshipping the Creator, and they started worshipping the creation. We see that with this overzealous environmental stuff. And then it goes on to say that men gave up natural desires, women gave up natural desires, and God pulled away and said, go at it. And that's always the last thing before a society collapses. Down is coming. It happened here. Do you know that 90% of the Roman Caesars were homosexuals. You know that King Herod that we read about in the time of Jesus was a homosexual? He kept young boys for his pleasure in the palace. It's nothing new. Is that shocking? God created things a certain way. Satan tries to turn it to totally 180 degrees. So why should that not be turned? Everything else is being turned around, but it gets turned around to the point to where the other is seen as evil. Good becomes evil and evil becomes good. It's a whole reversal. It's to the point now that the true church people are seen as the enemies of progressive society. So what do you suppose when the rapture takes place? They're going to celebrate. We're gone. And they don't realize that all hell's going to break loose. That's how deceived people are. I mean, we're living in this time period, right? Yes, somebody has to be living then. There are other cross references you can read about. What's this all under I?
Comparison between Christ and the Antichrist.
Okay, and this is a man that did a comparison. Jesus was what? Descended from above. Mm-hmm. The Satan?
From below.
Ascended from below. He came in the Father's name. He came in his own name. He humbled himself. Satan exalted himself for the Antichrist. He was what?
Despised.
Yes, and rejected. He was what?
Admired.
Exalted by God.
Cast into
hell. He had the Father's will. He had his own will. He's our Savior. Destroyer. The good shepherd, the evil shepherd. The true vine, the vine of the earth. Truth versus lie, the holy one, the lawless one, the man of sorrows, the man of sin, son of God, the son of destruction. What is this mystery of godliness? Mystery of iniquity, which means sin. And mystery in the Bible, remember, something that wasn't fully disclosed, like in the Old Testament, like the cross, really understanding. Even the disciples couldn't understand that Jesus was going to die and be resurrected. They had a real problem with that. That's all it means. Kind of a nice comparison, right?
Mm-hmm.
Is it obvious who you would rather be with? Okay. No? I said, is it obvious who you want to be with? I thought I heard no. Okay. 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 How about verses 5 through 10?
The beast was given a mouth to utter cowards and blasphemies and to exercise his authority for 42 months. He opened his mouth to blaspheme God and to slander his name and his dwelling place and those who live in heaven. He was given power to make war against the saints and to conquer them, and he was given authority over every tribe, people, language, and nation. All inhabitants of the earth will worship the beast, all whose names have not been written in the book of life belonging to the Lamb that was slain from the creation of the world. He who has an ear, let him hear. If anyone is to go into captivity he will go. If anyone is to be killed with the sword he will be killed. This calls for patient endurance and faithfulness on the part of the saints.
What does it mean if anybody has an ear? Of course they have two ears, but what does it mean?
Pay attention.
Better listen.
Yeah. Are you in tune to God? Are you listening? Are you aware of things? Or you're just kind of wandering around. Have you ever heard of the processionary caterpillars? It's a real type of caterpillar. It illustrates this. Are you familiar with caterpillars? They have a front end and a back end, but they kind of look the same. They took this jar with a rim around it, and they had the food that the caterpillars ate inside here. They would processionary because whatever one starts going, one kind of hooks right in the back. And so they get in the line. They coaxed this one and got it up on the rim and it started walking around, and when the end of the line, they broke it off so that the first one and the last one were connected. So now they're going in a circle. They all think the one ahead's the leader. So they keep going around here and their food's right here, but none of them stop because they're just following the one ahead of them. And they went around here until they all died and fell off. If we don't have an ear to hear, you know what I'm saying? That's what God's saying. Are you going to be like this? And there are people like that. You see them on the freeway all the time. They got the front end of their car right up behind the other one. They think somehow it's going to create more room or whatever it is. They're not looking down the road and seeing that all the traffic stopped. They're just watching that in front of them. That's what it's talking about there. Well, what comes out of that then? What is he telling us? I kind of outline. 42 months is really 3.5 years. So we're talking about the second half of the tribulation now. The peace treaty has been broken. It's called the Great Tribulation, time of Jacob's trouble. Now, number two, what does he try to do?
Trying to get all
the nations together. He's the little horn, came up and got the three, and now he's trying to get the 10 of the European, but now he wants to go beyond that. He consolidates the old Roman Empire first, that's those 10 toes. Then he tries to...
Israel in captivity.
Right. See, before it's this false peace trade, we're kind of taking care of you and so on, but now he wants to take total control, because his goal is what? To destroy them. Rules with the sword. What does this last part, 6, mean? Not all will be made captive.
Well, some won't follow him.
And in Israel, remember there's that remnant that God removes, probably to Petra in Jordan. We read about that earlier. That's pretty much, I think, what that section is telling us. How about verses 11 and 12? Now we get the other beast.
Then I saw another beast coming out of the earth. He had two horns like a lamb, and he spoke like a dragon. He exercised all the authority of the first beast on his behalf, and made the earth and its inhabitants worship the first beast, whose fatal wound had been healed.
See all those clues in there? We know what the first beast is. We already read about the wound healing and so on. So that's referring to what?
Antichrist.
So what's this another beast? Let's take a look at this horn situation. He comes out of the what? The earth. The first beast came out of the what?
Sea.
Sea is symbolic of what? If it's not naming a sea. Another word for earth, and I don't know what your Bible says, it could say land. So you have the earth or land. I like to use land better. And you have the sea. Which is there more of, sea or land?
Sea.
So sea is the Gentiles. The earth or land is Israel. First beast, the Antichrist, is going to be a Gentile. And we said he may be a Greek or Syrian in nationality. And a homosexual, and then all his character traits. Another beast, which we're calling the second beast, comes from the earth or the land, which is sort of saying then he is coming from where? His ancestry is going to be what? A Jew. Now, not necessarily from the tribe of Judah, but Jewish. That's all I'm going to say at this point. A false prophet. He may not be a practicing Jew at all. There are a lot of Jews that aren't into Judaism. Some have been saved and they're Christians, but obviously he's not going to be a Christian. It says that he has two horns and no crowns. So what's all that about? Horns are symbolic of... So he's going to have some kind of a two-pronged authority. That's where we're going to leave it for now. He's going to be like a lamb, smooth and mellow. See, the Antichrist is different. He's the rough, tough guy, but the false prophet's the smooth guy. Why? Because he is supposed to get people to worship the Antichrist.
He's to deceive us.
Exactly. Now he's going to speak with the voice of a dragon. So he's going to really be empowered to speak for the dragon is who?
Satan,
or he's the wolf in sheep clothes. Now under E, what is the purpose of this false prophet? He speaks for Satan, who controls the Antichrist. He's the PR guy, but he's also going to be the world religious leader. Now, can you tell me what his two horns are? He's the ambassador for the Antichrist, kind of the political a little involvement there, but he's actually the religious leader of the world religious organization. That's his two horns. He's going to get all the people of the world, that's the goal, to worship the beast who has this death wound healed. 13 through 15.
He did unbelievable miracles, such as making fire flame down to earth from the skies while everyone was watching. But doing these miracles, he was saving people everywhere. He could do these marvelous things whenever the first creature was there to watch him. And he ordered the people of the world to make a great statue of the first creature who was fatally wounded and then came back to life. He was permitted to give breath to this statue and even make it speak. Then the statue ordered that anyone refusing to worship it must die.
Now you see where it probably will be animated and performing miracles. Because again, trying to show people that this is really the God, setting them up. How about verses 16 and 18? This is where we get into the real controversy of this mark.
These force all people, small and great, to conform, save and free, to have a mark placed on your right hand or on your forehead. No one could buy or sell unless he had this mark, that is, the beast's name or the number that stands for the name. This calls for wisdom. Whoever is intelligent can figure out the meaning of the number of the beast, because the number stands for a man's name. It is number 66.
I did a lot of research on this, and I think there's a lot of accuracy in what this is. Well, first of all, the right hand or the forehead is where they're going to be. Where is the seal of God placed?
Forehead.
And right hand, possibly. Well, same thing. So again, it's an imitation. What is it buying or selling? It has to do with commerce. Under 3A, it says the name of the beast or the number representing his name. Now, if you go into certain languages, you can assign numbers and add them up and get 666. So let's just look at the numbers itself. The wisdom of the mark can be understood. That comes from creation. What day of the week was Adam created?
The sixth day.
Oh, so that's 1-6. All right. The sixth day of creation, man was created. References to the 666 are in 1 Kings 10 and 2 Chronicles 9. Solomon had 666 talents of gold, and so on. So this number does appear in the scripture. Hebrew, Greek, and Latin have numbers assigned to each letter in a name and then added together. Nero, who was a type of an antichrist in Latin, adds up to 666. Jesus in Greek is 888. The number of God is 7. Therefore, the Trinity would be represented as 777. Now that's some background. The satanic trinity then would be represented by 666. The first 6 equals the dragon, Satan. The second 6 would be the first beast or the antichrist. And the third 6, the second beast or the other beast, is the false prophet. Could the actual literal name of that person in one of those languages add up to 666? Yes, that's possible. But this we do know for sure. What does it say, the last thing? Satan versus God the Father. Antichrist versus Jesus Christ, God the Son. And the false prophet versus the Holy Spirit, God the Spirit. The false and against God Trinity versus the true Trinity. That's for sure what it means. To go and speculate on other names that you put in there and they come up there. It could happen. It could be that as well. We've seen it in history. Remember, Nero was during the writing of Revelation. The seventh is yet to come and reign will be brief. It becomes the Antichrist, but briefly it's the United Europe. It's the revived Roman Empire, which is a democracy. The eighth is a scarlet beast, was alive and then dead. See, that's talking about the Antichrist. We already talked about the 10 horns, the 10 kings to come. which are probably going to be in power now, these governors over these 10 regions. The 10 kings are given power to the 8th king. And that is where that prophecy goes in of the little horn coming up among the three and getting control. Okay, that's right, fits in right there, where the 10 give him power eventually. So that number 4 there, the 8th kingdom, is the Antichrist kingdom. The other one is just the revived Roman Empire. The 9th kingdom is, well, the stone that came and broke the statue, fell on the 10 toes, and that's Jesus Christ. And we'll read about that later in Revelation.